Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast with myself, Anthony Kendrick. Joining me for the show is Harry Philby.
Hey, hello.
And the returning Nick Davey.
Hey, good evening.
Get the title of the returning, that's good.
Yeah,
I'm on it. From Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. But that is surely Liverpool's day now.
Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular!
Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal!
Manchester City champions, and it's been decided in their favour at Old Trafford.
We'll start with the FA Cup third round. Well, for me, probably the biggest shock watching the game was Newport beating Leicester 2-1. You guys watched the game?
I watched the last 40 minutes. So basically saw all the exciting stuff, and I just think, like, the way that game went, it's better to win it like that than 1-0 as well. Like, to get Leicester to equalise late on and then to go on and get the penalty, it was amazing. I loved it so much. It was so good.
I think this game really just shows that the FA Cup is alive and well. Peak time on Sunday. I mean, it's easy to say that now. Had maybe Leicester won 4-0, we'd probably be like, here we go. But no, I think it proved there was a really great atmosphere. There seemed to be a general buzz on social media about the game. I think I saw Lineker tweet earlier that they had lots of views. But it just seemed like a proper old-fashioned tie. League Two club, obviously not got an awful lot of money. I like watching the promo before the game started, if you want to call it that, would be obviously a bit of a little brief history of Newport in recent years. And then they weren't playing any mugs as well. They were playing this team that's obviously won the Premier League and arguably one of the best of the so-called best of the rest title in the Premier League. So really big team. And in all fairness as well, it wasn't a weak Leicester team. I know that people are saying, oh yeah, they didn't start their key players, but again, after a grueling Premier League schedule, they probably didn't. But in fairness, Brighton or someone played Leicester team, I'd be worried. I thought it was loads of quality on the team. Iheanacho, I think they paid up $30 million for him up front. So it was a very strong Leicester team. I think the whole of the back four, bar Johnny Evans, was the back four when they won the Premier League title. So yeah, that says it all, really. Johnny Evans is obviously a player that was linked with Man City and Arsenal in the January transfer window last year. So. A really great FA Cup time, obviously. I'm very proud for Newport to get the win.
You talk about the buzz as well. I think the fact it was on the BBC kind of helps, because it's accessible and you get the higher viewing figures and that, which I think is really great. And, you know,
what a game for them to pick as well. It's like I always wonder if they've got some sort of supercomputer that's there to calculate a shocker. Mm. Like, if they're sitting there working out that right League Two team at home was against Premier League side, and they always seem to get the good ones on TV, because that was the only like major shock, like bottom team beating a top team. So there are a few other sort of Premier League champions, but yeah, that's true, that one as well. I guess that was as much of a shock as well, because Fulham were at home, weren't they?
Fulham are at home, so it'd be fairness. I think the only way that it probably was less of a shock is Leicester are better than Fulham.
Yeah, that's true.
Other than the Premiership, therefore, their attention. A bit like Cardiff losing to Gillingham, I suppose. Fulham and Cardiff and Huddersfield losing to Bristol. Look at the clubs that have gone out. There's a few of them, and they're all teams that are definitely struggling in a way. Not just the FA Cup, but they're the ones who I suppose will probably be happy. Well, I mean, you're never happy to go out of a cup, but I suppose almost like it's one less game to worry about, and they can focus their energy on trying to start up. And that's sort of, say, Fulham was losing to Oldham, Gillingham beating Cardiff, and Bristol City beating Huddersfield.
I think one which has got fallen by the wayside a bit, and perhaps it's because it wasn't selected for TV, is the Barnet beating Sheffield United. You know, they're the only non-league side left in the competition, I believe. But I thought that was a great result away as well, a 1-0 victory for them.
Barnet are a Football Manager favourite of mine as well, for some reason. They always pick them, so that's like me getting a result. So I'm proud of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, funny enough, Woking's always my one, only for that in-betweeners.
Yeah.
Right, that's why I pick Woking. But no, and obviously they played a good game on Sunday. But no, with Barnet, I think, you hit the head, that should really get a bit more credit where it's due. They're the only non-league club left standing now. But to go to a very good team, Sheffield United challenging for promotion, going to a very good team and coming away 1-0 winners is fantastic. And no, full credit. And Darren Curry, former Brighton player, he's only in the caretaker role as well. So full credit to him to as a caretaker manager to go and get that win.
I remember we covered it in an earlier podcast actually when the FA Cup third round draw was announced, because we were a bit negative about it, thinking there wouldn't be any good ties. But I remember we pointed out that there was only two non-league sides, and there are. I've just checked, double checked. There are. It's just Barnet and Woking were the only two, and yeah, everyone else other than those two are Football League.
Yeah, well, Barnet, as I say, last one standing now, and potentially could do a Lincoln. Lincoln got to obviously the quarters a couple of years ago. Sutton got to the fifth round, so. Mm-hmm. No, best of luck to them. And as I say, really, as I say, it's not like it's they're not being any mugs. They're beating a team that's we're going to be very much in the mix to get into the Premier League, and they've done it on their own, have done it away from home as well. So no, full credit. And I'm right, so they're at home to Brentford in the next round.
They are indeed.
I'd like to see that on TV, but the lowest ranked team looking at their home, I really hope that gets TV coverage. Because I think not necessarily for the BBC, but even for BT Sport, I hope they get that coverage, because it's so you need to support the non-league teams. That's what it's all about, the FA Cup, isn't it?
Yeah. I was just, there's all of the like lower league teams playing the top teams. It always reminds me of do you remember when Horsham played Swansea?
Yeah.
That was amazing. It was. I just remember like everyone I knew in Horsham was like desperate to go to that. Like it was amazing.
People were in as well. It was one of those ones where you get people in the trees watching over. But that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your local club doing well that you may not watch every week, or you may go and watch once a season when it's like a bank holiday or something. But no, that's what it's all about. And yeah, I remember that really well. I think the story writ itself, I think it was, I'm trying to think of the striker was, I usually know my knowledge, I think Farrell or someone. The death striker, I think, played for England's like
Lee Farrell.
It might have been, actually.
I've got the team sheets up here. Described as a utility player on the Sky Sports website. He's got a page on the Sky Sports website. How cool is that? He earned his place.
Lee Farrell, yeah, he was a death striker, and he scored, I think, a brace when they went to the replay, but. I think he scored. I'm trying to remember if he scored the old goal, but I know he was a death striker and played for England's disability team. So
amazing! What a bloke! What a story for him.
That's good. That's what the FA Cup's all about, isn't it? It's changed a bit. Barnet are a bit above. In all fairness, Barnet are above all. Should stand at their full-time football club.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hoping to get back into the Football League, I imagine. So a very good stadium as well. So, but no, full credit to Barnet. So fingers crossed they can. Potentially go even further, try and beat Brentford. They've got a winnable tie, Brentford at home. That's not disrespecting Brentford. Brentford are a great championship side. And hopefully, as I say, I really hope that gets TV coverage for the. I don't know if they've announced the TV games yet, but hopefully that gets TV coverage for the fourth round.
I hope so too. The TV rights are yet to be decided for the fourth round, as you say. I just want to mention Brighton as well. I'm sure you guys want to talk about them beating Bournemouth 3-1. Bournemouth on a poor run of form at the minute, but looking at the Brighton team, it was a strong side put out, and Anthony Knockhart and Co scored the opening goal.
But there was, I didn't realise there was 8 changes from the West Ham game.
Yeah, which actually just shows how deep our squad is now. That's a perfectly. I wouldn't be disappointed if that was the team that played in the league, with the exception of maybe Balogun for Dunk. That's the only one I would have been like, and Ryan for, but Ryan's obviously away at the moment. But like, it shows how big our squad's got, and that's without Ali Reza and his Kiedo still injured. It was all really good, really. I watched the whole game, and it was. Quite a boring first half, but we played really well in the second half, so got to be really happy with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well with Brighton, that it proves that, yeah, so I don't think when people were quick to slate the cups, and why are they rested? Why are they making so many changes? I think, as you say, you've hit the nail on the head. A bit like Leicester, I think. So we made 8 changes, but if that was as you say, if that was a Premier League team out, I wouldn't be sort of angry about it at all. As I say, I think it's... Balogun for Dunk, but and there's even players who I presume would start. I thought Giroux would start in the wing. Apologies if I pronounced that wrong. And Dan Byrne, I thought he would start as well. So I think that's shooting, obviously taking it seriously. I think he's probably looked at our position in the league. He's probably thought, yeah, okay, we're in a comfortable enough position. Not saying we're safe by any stretch of the imagination, but I think we're in a good enough position where we can maybe keep a sharp eye on the cup as well. And,
he did a really interesting interview a few weeks ago where he was talking about how like his four-year ambition for Brighton is to stay as a mid-table Premier League club and really compete in a trophy. Like he wants us to get to a final. Mm. So, which we hadn't taken them seriously in the last 3 years because we were fighting for relegation or promotion. And now that we look fairly comfortably like we're going to stay up at this moment, he may as well play a good team. So it makes sense for him.
He seems to care more about the FA. I'm not saying it because it's obviously the way it's probably worked out, but he does seem to generally care more about the FA Cup than the Carabao Cup. You've got to look at the score we played in the League Cup against Southampton. I think there was five youngsters. There was a couple of players I've never even, I'll be honest, never even heard of. But that actually started the game. That's not even sort of on the bench. Barkley and Collar, I've never even heard of. They're in the squad and they played very well, but so I think that just says about his intention of the League Cup compared to the FA Cup, where he's played a lot of obviously first team players. And so I think he knows football well, and I think, as I say, it'll be great to have around the cup, and it's a very winnable time. Ralph won't say the job's done by any stretch of the imagination, but it's winnable. And you'd like to think if we can get past West Brom, then it's the fifth man, then you're really talking again.
Yeah, big home tie with the two Albions.
That's it. Yeah. What versus Brom part two.
Oh God, I forgot about that. That's going to be awful. That's going to be toxic.
Yeah, that's the bit. I hope there's obviously I'm hoping it just does obviously cause idiots and get the bad name for both clubs. Really.
Yeah, it's true. On other Brighton related news, not to turn this into the Brighton podcast, did you see that Nathan Jones has been given the Stoke job?
Yeah,
really cool. That's really cool. I'm really proud of him, like, because he did well in his little interim stage, and all the players always speak really highly of him and all loved him. So it's really good for him, to be honest. Really happy.
Fantastic for him. And you say that Fulham away game was brilliant. One of my favourite away games. His passion was clear to see. And I have to say, I was listening to the podcast. I'm not trying to hype up another podcast, but the debate podcast when I was walking into work this morning, actually, and they said Bookie's favourite is Nathan Jones, and I dropped my phone on the floor. Where did that come from? And then refreshed my phone at lunch, and yeah, there he was. He was the new manager of Stoke. So it's happened quite quickly, but I just hope Stoke give him time, because Luton, he's taken time to get Luton to where he's got them. It did take time. He started off quite slow. I just hope Stoke give him time, because Stoke have gone through a very quick period of change of managers. I think they changed about four managers over the last year, isn't it? Or something crazy.
Yeah, something stupid like that.
So they need to really just look into, I think, taking their time with him, because he's a very good manager. But I think the way he slowly built Luton into a fantastic team, and I just hope Stoke give him that time, because he's clearly knows the game. He's got very good passion for the game, and I say he deserves his chance, and just really hope Stoke can give him that chance and repay him, if that makes sort of sense.
Yeah, and the only real risk with that, I think, for Stoke is that at Luton he already had a level of respect by the players in the club, because he was a former player as well, and they all really liked him, and he had a bit of reputation at club, kind of similar to how Eddie Howe does at Bournemouth. But to be honest, he plays such an exciting brand of attacking football that I feel like the Stoke fans will be able to get behind that. As long as they just can see signs of progress, they'll be pretty happy with him, because people were calling him the League Two Guardiola, because they were winning games like 8-1 and stuff like that. It was ridiculous. They looked so exciting to watch. But yeah, I hope he does well.
Another story I saw around Brighton, not as positive a story, but a fan has been banned from 5 games by the club because he's made comments online. I had a look, I couldn't see any comments on exactly what they were, but apparently it was some racism comments.
Really?
Apparently,
I didn't know about this.
Apparently he made racist comments, but I don't know the full story, but in principle, do you think that clubs should be able to ban fans for making comments online?
It depends what the nature is. I mean, if it's calling someone a wanker, then no. I think that's the bit. It'll obviously be. I understand that it was racist abuse towards Cyril Regis, who's obviously. That's just what I've just heard. I could be completely wrong. It's just what was.
Yeah, that's what I understood it to be. Yeah.
And that's appalling. That's true. And then, yeah, fair enough. The ban's definitely in order. And then I think that a ban's definitely in order. And I think we need to not go over the top of it. I think, as I say, if someone's sort of I'm just keeping on. I've just seen the Burton Albion are just now 6-0 down. I think if someone's just calling someone like, for instance, Wilfred Zaha, or someone just calls him a dickhead or something on Twitter, I don't think
that's a fair comment.
I think that's fair. And in token, if Palace fans then turn around and call you as Duncan dickhead, then.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, obviously, if people are getting personal, they're starting going into. Stuff as I say, if they're starting to use a racist abuse, then homophobic abuse, then yeah, throw the book at them, take away their football. It will teach them a lesson as well. No, 100%, I agree with it. I wouldn't go too over the top. I don't think people should be scared to almost tweet, if that makes sense. But I think, you've got to watch what you say, haven't you? Especially if you're getting racist, because, there's just no need for that at all.
And it looks like, from what I'm reading of the story now, is that it was. People were complaining to the club directly, so it wasn't like they were looking around seeking out somebody to ban. It was, in that kind of way, or they just stumbled across it. It was people were actively saying this person is saying horrible things, so they banned him for 5 matches. Which I think it does prove a point. And it happens with us quite a lot where I think it was a Chelsea fan who got banned for homophobic comments or somebody.
The other day.
Yeah, they completed the hat trick because I think they had sexist, homophobic, and racist comments all within 2 months from the Chelsea fans. Obviously, there's no place for that in football, and every group of fans is going to have a few bad eggs, and I think you have to do something about it, and I think a 5-match ban is probably fair.
Well, that's it. You're taking their football away from them. So
exactly.
That's the keyest thing. Yeah, if you're the, hey, like that was obviously the Arsenal Tottenham game. The idiots that for both sets, to be fair, Tottenham fans throwing a banana skin at Aubameyang, and then in token Arsenal fans then throwing a bottle at Dele Alli.
Can't believe people still do that. It's so like outdated. and just horrible. I can't believe it. It's amazing.
It's 2019. It's 2019. There's no place for it. And so I think the best way to do it is simply take the football away from them.
I feel like I shouldn't have even raised it. It's such a stupid issue. This, like, you feel like the debate and all that should have moved beyond this, years ago. It's, but anyway. I will. Go on. Sorry. Did you wanna?
Yeah. It just makes you think like, because the bits that go around about racism and. Sort of inclusion and that kind of things in football, every now and again it goes on to the important stuff like the ways black players are treated in the media with all the Sterling stuff and the lack of black managers in the Football League. And then you see this sort of stuff from fans and you think it's just, my God, it's still like how could, I just don't understand how that stuff still happens. I don't understand how anybody thinks that that's a good idea and that they won't get caught. Mm. And that it's fair in the first place. Obviously, it's a blatantly wrong thing to do, but also how you can just be so stupid as to think you wouldn't get caught or something like that. It's insane. These people are ridiculous.
Okay, I'll move on to something there is a bit more, perhaps, debate on, that there might be some more differing views. VAR's been continued to be trialled. There were two main games where I sort of noticed it as I was watching over the weekend. The Man United game, in which a penalty was given against Reading, probably correctly so, and Burnley's game where Vidra was ready to take a penalty and then much later they went back and decided it wasn't a penalty. What are your thoughts on the VAR being used?
I'm going to touch on it, and I've quite heard from Liam Rossini about it. I thought which hit me on the head. Obviously, great that it's him because we need those correct decisions in football. I thought it was an absolute success during the World Cup.
Yep.
But I think what I've noticed over the last couple of days, I think the Burnley game as well, is the speed of it. That's something that needs to be addressed because you can't have it disrupting the flow of the game. Because obviously, football is better than most sports in the terms that it flows. It's fantastic the way that our football flows. And as I say, we can't have that getting disrupted because, as soon as that starts flowing down, then the whole football's gonna, the whole game's gonna sort of suffer because it's such a vital part of the game, how well the system flows. So if they can just obviously get the speed of the decision sorted out, then it's a no-brainer and it's obviously going to be a complete success in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, unfortunately, we're probably not going to get much of a debate because I completely agree. Basically, my view on it was I already liked it as an idea in the first place, and my worries were exactly what you just said: is how is it actually physically going to work? Is it going to be disruptive? And the way I saw it was when I was watching the World Cup, I was watching it thinking this will be probably be the worst it will ever be. Like, that's probably the least like fluid it's ever going to be in the game. And it wasn't that bad. It was actually quite exciting at times, I thought. And there is definitely going to be a few things to iron out. Like, I do think next year is probably going to be one of those seasons where like the least football is actually played in a way, because there's a really good stat about that me and my dad were looking at when we were watching a game the other day, that actually in football, most the ball is only in play on average for about 60 minutes of a match. Mm. And so with VAR coming in as well, I'm expecting that to drop in a bit of a way. And those kind of things are the things I'm worried about. But I also think the main thing that I like about VAR is it brings in, an element of responsibility on the players to be more sporting, because it can mean you can't go in for those horrible diving tackles and hope you get away with it, because you just won't. Like, you're going to get sent off for them, as well as it helps bring in stuff like players going down on fouls that, like, not like the dives, but players overacting and that kind of thing. People will be able to see, like, the referees will be able to see that it's ridiculous, and hopefully that will eventually lead to yellow cards and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all stuff that will grow out of VAR coming in. So yeah, annoyingly, we all agree. So
I think a big issue with it, though, for me, a bigger issue than perhaps the amount of time, is it's all well and good watching it on the TV and having complaining about the amount of time and that. But I think for the fans in the stadium, and you consider somewhere like Old Trafford where there isn't a screen or anything, it just said VAR check in progress. And I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think Burnley has a screen either. You know, when they can't see the replays, I think fans would be a bit more accepting in the ground if they can see these issues and say, yeah, okay, fair enough, that was or wasn't a penalty or a red card or whatever. But when fans can't see these issues and they're just seeing a referee get overturned without the video themselves, I think that's a huge issue, which I think every ground has to be forced to have a screen if they're going to have VAR, myself.
Yeah, or you have to really enforce the idea that the referees, if you know, the whole hand signal of the big square, and you're right that there has to be some kind of clear demonstration. But it's, for me, that's only the same as if there was already like a bad decision made from the perspective of the fans, even if it turned out to be right, because everyone's just gonna call the referee a wanker anyway. Like, you're right that then does need to be a clear message to the fans in the stadium. But I think the hand signals and the and everything like that will probably do for now. But I guess I think there must be some reason they can't show the replays in the stadium, because they didn't do it in the World Cup, apparently.
Current Premier League rules for teams that do have stadiums says they're not allowed to show replays of any controversial incidents, only in brackets, positive incidents, i.e. goals or trickery and stuff. They're not allowed to show, say if a team gets a penalty, they're not allowed to show the incident that led to the penalty. That's Premier League rules, but I assume they'd change that, I think.
Yeah, because I think that was introduced because of referee abuse. If they put it on the TV and it was like blatantly wrong, like an offside decision, then the lino would get absolutely destroyed. Yeah, I think that does make sense. I mean, like we said, I think it's going to be like ironed out, the sort of issues with it, over the next, probably over the season, to be honest. So there will be the people who still aren't quite into it. There will definitely be things for them to complain about, but I think that they will get ironed out over the course of like the next 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. Man City are now 8-0 up.
But no, I quite agree about what you guys are saying. I couldn't agree anymore. Sorry, it's not really a debate, but Shall I just
disagree for the sake of it? Shall I play devil's advocate? It's a load of nonsense. Grassroots football. That's the usual thing.
I think
they're clearly good enough to do their jobs.
I think I'm more against VAR than you guys are, to be honest.
It's interesting how the conversation shift from not wanting VAR is now controversial as opposed to wanting VAR. Because it used to be the other way around, like 2 or 3 years ago. The people who wanted VAR were sort of the like anti-football in a way. Like not keeping it true to the sport. And now it's like, I feel like most people want it after seeing it in the World Cup.
Mm. Yeah, the World Cup was my decision, but also even the other day, I know it wasn't me at the Brighton Everton game, even though a day when Lacardia's goal, it wasn't a VAR decision, but even the suspense of that with the ref running over and having that, oh, is he going to give it, is he not?
Yeah.
I actually like that.
The best bit about that was I I did that thing where I saw the lino put his flag up, so I didn't celebrate the goal. Yeah. And then he gave it, so I celebrated like late as well because I thought it was offside immediately. And then they obviously worked out between. Amazing bit of refereeing there as well. I'll give them credit. Can't remember who it was, but that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah. I think to be fair, straight away he knew. We said straight away. I think the refs can overrule this because I think he looked very convinced. The ref and
yeah.
Obviously it wasn't a long discussion with the linesman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was amazing.
As well as United going through, as I mentioned, the other big teams, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham and Manchester City got through. The only one of the top six who didn't were Liverpool, who had a tricky away tie to Wolves. But I didn't think Jurgen Klopp took that game particularly seriously. I thought it was I thought Liverpool was a really disappointing performance, really. Whether Jurgen Klopp's just not interested in the FA Cup and he's solely focused on the league, I don't know.
Oh, I think with Liverpool, don't get me wrong, I love the FA Cup and everything, but I think they're probably the one club in the Premier League that could be forgiven for fielding that team that they did.
Yeah.
And it's not slating that team. I was really disappointed, by the way, with some of those players. Danny Sturridge was awful, absolutely atrocious. I mean, you know, this is a striker as well. I think Shearer touched on it, in all fairness. I think he's a striker, he's out of contract in the summer. Wouldn't you try and play, even if it's not going to be at Liverpool next season, wouldn't you try and have the best game of your life career to even try and get even to a contract at someone good, even around Europe potentially? But he was awful, absolutely awful, I thought. I think the Wolves defenders probably won't have an easy game. He didn't move, he just looked atrocious.
Which is a real shame because he started the season so well and he's completely fallen off a cliff. Like, it's amazing.
It's incredible. Origi, I don't think he did much until he obviously scored the goal out of absolutely nothing. You know, so a very good finish, don't get me wrong, but he was appalling, I thought. So it's these Liverpool players. I think Klopp will be a bit pissed off with them as well. I mean, he's given them a chance, a free hit almost, and they were just dreadful, I thought. And it's not just taking anything away from Wolves. I thought Wolves almost had a little feel that they looked back to their sort of championship self. And that's not just because Neves struck one from outside the area. But they did look like they had a bit more freedom. They just looked like they were enjoying it a bit more, Wolves. I mean, sometimes, I mean, even in the reverse fixture, they still played a bit too under pressure, a bit too tense with their sort of decision making. But this game, I thought they looked almost like they had a bit of freedom about them. And they played very well. And as I said, I think Liverpool, whilst it's not one, as I said earlier at the start of the show, no one really likes going out of the cup. I think in the scheme of Liverpool where they are now, still obviously in the best position in the league, still in the Champions League as well. I think they'd lose too much sleep about going out of the cup.
Do you think?
Yeah, and also for Wolves, like, they are the perfect team to go out and play their first team. Like, they're just nailed on, not going to get relegated. They're probably not going to make it into Europe. They are just going to go for it, like, full on for the cups and see how far they can go.
Wolves is a great example. I think Wolves and Everton are two teams that I would actually think about maybe in some games, and West Ham potentially as well, even hopefully in a few wins, Tom Brighton. I don't want to put us in that category because I don't want to get too overconfident. But no, I think Wolves and Everton are two of the best examples to use. I think in games, they should potentially think about maybe resting players in a Premier League game, I think. Mm-hmm. They've got, say, someone like maybe City away. I'd probably field a weak team and then go full out against them in the FA Cup. I know... obviously, I know in the past we've seen this and it's kind of worked with Mick McCarthy and Ian Holloway. I think they've done it probably once when they fielded like a crap team against, I know this was all league business, they fielded a crap team against then United, who obviously were beating everyone. I think they fielded a crap team, so they just took them to beat anyway, and then they went and fielded a strong team against a winnable game in the next game. Like a few years ago that happened. So I potentially think about doing that if I was Everton, resting a few big players for a Premier League game and then starting them in the FA Cup, because it's a great chance of silverware and a route into Europe, don't forget, as well. So
absolutely.
We're not going to end up in the league, but they can get into the Europa League anyway through the FA Cup, and apart from that, you're winning the FA Cup.
Yeah.
I actually wrote that down as my next point, because I looked at both the Everton and the West Ham teams were basically first teams. They were very strong teams. And yeah, I completely agree that sides like that, I'd even put maybe Crystal Palace in that bracket as well. Sides like that who should take the FA Cup super seriously. Oh, sorry, yeah.
No, it's fine. I'm too young to really get the rivalry anyway.
Okay, and I should mention as well, just like to mention that Derby County came back from two goals down to draw 2-2 with Southampton. Nathan Redmond scoring twice for them, but then Jack Marriott and Tom Lawrence pulling the goals back. So there'll be a replay, which will be on the BBC. So I'm looking forward to that.
yeah, should be a good game. I think the replay. And it seemed like a good game. I think Derby will obviously be more happy with the draw. But no, they're loving their cups this year, for Derby. What's it about? Beat United in the Capital One Cup and causing Southampton a few issues as well. And that's good credit as well for Lamps and for the Derby players to come down from two down against the Premier League club to come back and get the draw. But yeah, I can't imagine Southampton best pleased about squandering a 2-0 lead to have another. And have another football match as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where's Shane to complain when you need him?
Yep.
Just one final thing I want to mention with regards to the FA Cup. Only 10 of the games kicked off Saturday at 3 o'clock. There were 6 games on British television, on BT and BBC, the BBC channels, but a lot of other games were moved because of foreign TV reasons. Do you think that it had any effect on the magic of the FA Cup?
Well, I'm not a fan of it. I'm a traditionalist, though. Call me a bit of a dinosaur, but I'm a traditionalist. I think they should only be it's not even that. Even going back, not even a dinosaur. I would like maybe a 12:30 game fine, half 5 game fine, but the rest. Why is there loads at 12:30 and 5:30, which I didn't like? I get the Sunday, the 2 o'clock. To know they've done the stuff with obviously the football focus and final score, but on a Saturday, man. I mean, it should be. I don't know why they've had to make them all 12:30 and 5. I get like the foreign TV rights, but no, disappointed for me. I'd have rather seen them all at 3 o'clock. It's just me being a traditionist. They didn't make Soccer Saturday that enjoyable. I know I was working in Italy, but when I was staring over the TV, it just made it a bit less enjoyable.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's like, it's annoying because I would rather have more games on TV, so I'm fine with the breaking it apart, but sometimes they mess it up so badly that it's ridiculous. Like last season, I went to the Brighton Man City game at the Etihad, and it was an 8 o'clock kickoff at City. So I got home at 3:30 in the morning, and it was on a weekday. And like you'd think, like, just be sensible about it. Like, make it fans first. Make people want to go to the games at least for these, because sometimes they make them just so unrealistic for fans to do that it ruins the point of it being on TV in the first place for me. If the fans are going to struggle to get there and this kind of stuff, it you know, that's where it bothers me. Most other times it doesn't, where it's a sensible put it on TV because you can, all that kind of stuff. That's all fine, but. When they make it impossible for people to go, that's when it annoys me.
I think, being in Manchester, I can look at it the other way as well, because, going down south because of the FA Cup final being held later, a later kickoff time at 5 or something, it's caused problems for Manchester and Liverpool clubs to get home after the FA Cup final. There's been no trains, so there's been issues there as well, which... You know, it's something that it's annoyed me for the last few years, actually.
I completely agree. To be fair, I wasn't going to go to the Bournemouth game on Saturday anyway because of the rail replacement buses from Southampton to Bournemouth. But 12:30, it was like almost the final nail in the coffin of me going. So,
and
on the bloody TV as well. So,
and we always lose there. This was like the one time we've won.
Okay, anyway, we'll move on from the FA Cup. Well, we will sort of move on from the FA Cup, but we're going on to the first round of the quiz, which is FA Cup themed.
Hooray!
I'm going to be watching this.
So, I'm going to ask you a question.
That's off. I won the wrestling quiz, so I would make it a double whammy.
I think I'm at 2 draws, 1 loss with the quizzes.
I'll be Oliver, so in the wrestling quiz, so...
So you're on form.
Well, hopefully Harry provides a much tougher test than Oliver. We'll see.
That's unlikely. Football, not wrestling, though. Unless you've got an element of WrestleMania.
So the question has 14 correct answers. I would say 13 of them are realistically guessable, and the answers are either, to give you a bit of a clue, the answers are either Premier League or current Football League team. So they're all well-known teams. I want you to name any club which has reached the FA Cup final but has not won the FA Cup. So, for example, Man United or Arsenal would be incorrect because they've won the FA Cup. So anyone who's been a runner-up but never the winner. You get 5 guesses each, and take it in turns.
I could think of one that that was it.
I'm wondering if we're thinking of the same one, so let's see who goes first.
Well, Harry gets to go first because Nick, you won the wrestling, so I'm saying that Harry gets to go first for that reason.
Am I thinking about the League Cup? That's the problem. I think it is the League Cup, damn it. I'm not going to say that then. It's going to annoy me if that's wrong. Brighton.
That wasn't actually the team I was thinking of.
But we have done it.
Brighton's correct.
We lost to Man United. My dad never stops going on about it.
1983.
It wasn't the team I was thinking of. And this is going to be even worse, because the team I was thinking is Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace are correct. They've been runners-up twice.
It's only because the whole thing was the picture of Pardew as a display picture for that quiz. So,
over to you, Harry.
Okay, teams who have never won the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. Right, that was like the only one I think I could logically know. Mm. I'm just like punting at teams now.
They're all sort of guessable teams. There's not like Louisville or anything stupid like that.
No, okay. The problem is like I just don't know who won it in like pre-2000s. So I've just got no hope for that. Never won it. I think they won. I'm just going to guess it because I think they were in the League Cup final, but I'm going to guess Bradford. It was a few years ago. I think that was the League Cup final, though, with Swansea.
No, Bradford, I think they've been to an FA Cup final and lost, but they've also been to an FA Cup final and won as well.
Okay, because they did do one with Swansea and they lost 5-0.
That was the League Cup. It was when they beat Arsenal on the way.
But yeah, so unfortunately that's incorrect.
Oh, that's a shame.
Over to you, Nick.
Okay, I'm going to go for this one because I'm just going to guess it, but they played Arsenal a few years ago. Hull?
Yeah, Hull's correct.
Is that a right answer?
Yeah, Hull is correct. Hull City is correct. 2014 they played Arsenal.
Okay. I'll go with Southampton. That might have been the League Cup as well a few years ago. They won the final. I don't know. Southampton.
Southampton's not right. I don't believe they've ever reached the FA Cup.
No, why am I so focused on the League Cup?
they played Arsenal in the FA Cup final. I think it was in 2003.
Okay. So they must have won it.
No, they lost 1-0.
Oh, right. What, in the
Oh,
in
Southampton. The sorry, Southampton did win it in 76.
Okay.
Either way, it's incorrect.
Yeah, okay. I'm wrong either way. It doesn't matter. Just tell me I'm wrong. That's all I need to know.
Yeah. Makes me feel a little bit less stupid because I don't have the list in front of me. Over to you, Nick.
Okay, I'm just going back each FA Cup. I almost just said a team that actually just won the FA Cup by mistake, even because I just proved one. Anyway, 2011, Man City beat Stoke in the final, so I'm going to go for Stoke.
Correct. So that's 3-1 to Nick. So, Harry, you've got to get the next two.
Okay. I'm trying to think. This is like so out of my depth. I'm absolutely useless with this. I'm just going to guess I'm going to guess a random team. Nottingham Forest. I feel like they must have won it.
Is that your answer?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Forest have won it twice, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I thought they would have done.
All right, so Nick.
Hello.
You got another guess you'd like to give us?
Right. So 2010 was Tottenham against Chelsea against Portsmouth. However, Portsmouth obviously won it a couple of years ago. Oh yeah, we'll go for Cardiff.
Cardiff have won the FA Cup back in 1927, I'm afraid.
Don't you know that? You've got to remember that. Come on.
Just to complete the five each, Harry, do you want to give a fifth team?
No, not really. I have no idea. No chance.
Okay.
Watford.
Yes, that's correct.
Is it? Yeah, go me.
They reached the 1984 final.
What's the score? What's the winner?
You've won 3-2, but we're just doing the final one just for fun. If that exists in these quizzes.
I could still win 4-2 though.
You could, yeah.
Okay. It matters.
Right, 2007 Everton have won it. I must have done. 2004 Millwall.
That's correct. That's 4 out of 5.
Wow, I would have thought they would have won it.
So the correct answer is.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have won it. now.
Correct answers you could have had: Birmingham City, who've been runners up twice, Brighton, Bristol City, Crystal Palace, Fulham, Hull City, Leicester City, who've been runners up the most times, four times, Luton Town, Middlesbrough, Millwall, Queen's Park Rangers, Stoke and Watford. There's also Queen's Park, who were a Scottish team.
The team that was disbanded, wasn't
there? Yeah, so I took it as given you wouldn't get that because that was 1885. But the other 13 were all gettable teams. I think
That's the pointless answer, I guess.
Yeah, I sort of took. Yeah, I didn't know that was on the BBC recently. But yeah, all right. So that's 1-0 to Nick, and we'll revisit the quiz at the end of the show. So I guess we might come back to VAR a little bit. It was the first EFL Cup semi-final. Tottenham beating Chelsea 1-0 in the first round. A controversial penalty given. More VAR, I guess. We don't need to have a debate about it again. But what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a penalty. I mean, it's a bit harsh on Chelsea because I thought they were by miles the better team. I thought they played way better than Tottenham did in terms of creating chances and stuff. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that it maybe came down to a penalty, but those kind of games happen anyway without VAR. So yeah, I think it is the right decision. That I know like some people hate the fact that players like trail a leg like Kane did and just sort of expect the contact, and but you can't go diving in like that if you're a keeper. It is a nailed on penalty to me, and I think it's a right decision. I think Tottenham could do quite well in the cup though as well. I do hope they do well.
Looking at Chelsea, there's quite a lot of stuff going on transfer wise. There's rumours about Fabregas, Morata, but also really strongly Hudson-Odoi potentially going to Bayern Munich or Germany in general. Do you think Hudson-Odoi should leave and go to Germany, or do you think he should stay and try and get into the Chelsea first team?
I think he should go on loan to a Bundesliga side, and I don't think he should transfer. But that's maybe for the sake of me wanting him to stay at Chelsea. Like the bit that's strange about it for me is the transfer fee rumoured is £30 million, and like, I know that seems like a lot of money, but when both Sarri and Bayern Munich and a load of other clubs that have been linked with him say they think he could become the best winger in the world, they've all been saying he's amazing. £30 million doesn't seem like something Chelsea would accept for a player they think could be one of the best wingers in the world. So it seems really strange to me that's how low the figure is. But the only issue is I can't see him getting in the first team at Chelsea anytime soon unless Hazard leaves, and I don't think he'll leave, and especially not in January, because Sarri doesn't generally play youth players and doesn't really rotate his team, because we've seen it with Loftus-Cheek. So like, I think he would benefit more from going out on loan, probably to a Bundesliga team, because that's a really good place for young players to go on loan at the moment. Really? I hope he doesn't leave, and I don't know if he will. I would say he probably will not end up leaving, but
he's turned down a new contract, so it puts Chelsea in quite a difficult position.
But there might just be to force a bit of leverage to get him to put him in the team, because he played in the FA Cup, didn't he? Mm-hmm. He played against Spurs and he looked good. So I will be honest, I don't know that much about him as a player, other than that loads of people rate him, like everyone really, really does like him. And he might be, it's interesting that the sort of Sancho thing, there is the Sancho connection, sort of like the young prospect going off to the Bundesliga to go and be a successful player. But it does make sense from a Bayern perspective as well, with Robin and Ribery both being in their like early 30s now, like aging out. That he would get minutes 100%. He would play more at Bayern than he would at Chelsea by quite a long way. He'd get 20 odd starts a season probably next year. So it would make sense in that respect. But I think it'd be a weird move for Chelsea, especially seeing as they're lacking in wings positions, although they did just sign Pulisic.
I was just going to say that 50 odd million, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's interesting, people seem to think that a lot of people have been saying that that's a lot of money. I don't really think it is. From what I know about him, he's a serious prospect. Like he's not got like the goals and assist numbers that other players have, but every time I sort of see footage of him, he looks like a ridiculously good player for a sort of 20, 19, 20 year old. It seems insane. So I'm really excited to see him. That might be justification for Hudson-Odoi going to Germany, though, if they've signed Pulisic and he'll play ahead of him. But, yeah.
What do you think, Nick? Do you think, because there's been quite a few English players going over to the Bundesliga at the minute. Do you think he should go?
I think so. I think Sancho and Rhys Nelson are great examples of players who have gone, and obviously I think they're the only players really since Owen Hargreaves that have really gone there abroad and really and stood out. So I think it will do. I think he should. I think if Chelsea can guarantee him a bit more minutes, I think maybe next season with Pedro obviously aging a bit, Willian potentially going, I think if you can have him and obviously and the new signing on the wings, I think, yeah, potentially they could find a place for him. But he's obviously a great talent. He looked very good against Tottenham the other night. So I'd like to see him still in the Premier League, but I think for his best move, I think a move to 100%, I think a move to Germany will be good for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially Munich, I think you've hit the nail on the head there about Asian players. So if they can offer him a good amount of minutes, then I think it'll be a no-brainer as well for him.
Just looking at Spurs, they've said that there's a couple of stories about them. They'll be at Wembley until at least March, suggesting Crystal Palace game, which I think is at the end of the month, at the end of March will be the first game at the new stadium. And also Pochettino saying that he'd like to stay at Tottenham for 20 years. If you read everything Sky Sports say, he's confirmed as the United boss next season, the way their stories have been going lately. But yeah, it's a big game for them again. Well, for both teams really, Tottenham and Man United this weekend on Sunday.
Obviously I'm happy it's going to be. I need it to be done by April 6th because when Brighton visit there. But I'm
keen to go to that as well.
I think it's going to be. I think it'll be Wembley for the whole season.
Would you, as a Brighton fan, would you rather play them at Wembley or at the new stadium?
New stadium,
100%.
Yeah. We already did. I did the Wembley thing last season, and all I could think while I was watching it was this would be so much better if it actually meant anything. Because all it was just a plain old league game, and
yeah,
they scored from a scuffed cross and everything, and that was all miserable as well. But yeah, it definitely loses its magic when you know it's just a normal game.
Yeah,
I think it's awful. I think they should never have to play at Wembley.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Wembley's been devalued now. Completely devalued Wembley playing there. So it didn't feel right being there last season. The atmosphere was dead. The only time I'm interested in going to Wembley is if it's in a cup final or a playoff final site. But I personally think that I think I kind of agree with what Warnock's saying about Tottenham Stadium. I think they should be made to play Wembley for the rest of the season in that regard. I'm kind of arguing myself then, but no, I think I don't think it would be very fair if they then moved into the new stadium.
And also, it's a sign that it's probably going to get delayed when even the headline says they'll play there until at least March. Like that, I can just see it getting delayed till the end of the season already.
Surely for I would argue perhaps for fairness to all the teams that have got to play away, surely it would be easier just for them to say, you know, we'll open the new stadium, and also you get a better opening start next season. Surely that would make more sense now.
Unless they lose Poch and have a nightmare summer, that would really dampen the mood.
Yeah, true.
I think if I were them, I would wait till the end of next season, because I'd imagine they have to pay the rent or whatever they pay on Wembley till the end of the season anyway. I'd imagine they can't just stop doing that deal now. They may as well just ride it out, get the stadium done and ready, and then do it at the end of next year. To their credit, the stadium looks amazing. It looks really cool. I would love to go, but you know, I find it a bit weird that this has become like a big story in Tottenham as to how long it's taking them to build their stadium. Like, they should have just said it will be ready for the start of next year,
and then
done it next season. I think moving mid-season does seem a bit weird as well. So if I were them, I would have said let's just get it done for next year and forget about it this season.
Mm-hmm. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's made a really good start at United. He's won all the games so far, but he's got his first proper test, I would say, against Tottenham this weekend. I'm really, really looking forward to that game, actually, because it'll really give a good benchmark of where Man United are, because at the moment it's very difficult to sort of see them finishing any higher than sixth, or whether they can get into the top four or not. But I think this weekend that'll be a really big game.
It does look exciting. The Ollie's like his football style at the moment, because basically they're still United. It seems like to me they're basically still conceding the same amount of shots and the same amount of sort of like they have still haven't. Have they kept a clean sheet under Ollie, or was that in the Newcastle game that they did away?
They kept a clean sheet against Newcastle, and they kept one in the FA Cup as well against Reading. But that was because of the defence performance.
Who have they conceded against? Cardiff.
And Huddersfield as well. But it's just interesting because it's so strange that you can just see in the players that Ollie's just come in and said, go and play with some freedom, go play how you want, be the players you are, which is easy for him to do when he knows he's only going to be there for 6 months. And it was always expected that they were going to win these games anyway. Like it would be really interesting if Mourinho had won all of these last four or five games. Admittedly, he wouldn't won them by 4 or 5-1 or whatever. He would have won them like 2-0 or something. But it would be interesting if people were as positive as they are now that Ollie's in. It's still weird to me, the United one. It must be so strange as a player at that club knowing that he's not going to be your manager next season.
There's a good chance he'll be there next season, to be fair.
Do you think?
I think he's got every chance. It's a bit like Gareth Southgate when he took over as England boss. I mean, it was one of them where he wasn't expected per se. But if United beat Tottenham and, you know, win a few more games, it'll be very difficult for the club to turn around and say, no, we're not going to retain Solskjaer next season. It's impossible for the club not to, I think, if he continues.
I think he's got no chance of being there next season. I don't know what I get the aspect of him being a senior figure at the club and being motivational and being good for the players for that sake, but I would pick Pochettino ahead of him any day of the week. I would pick Zidane ahead of him any day of the week, although I don't think you'll get him.
Even if we beat Tottenham out and finished top four end of the season and something like that.
That would be exceptional, though. I think it's way too early to. I do find this talk about him being the permanent manager now way too early. Like, you're right. Like, you haven't played a great team yet. You've played, what was it, Newcastle, Huddersfield, and Cardiff. They're probably the three worst teams in the league. And they are, in my books, three easy wins, even when it was under Mourinho and everything was really toxic and really, really unpleasant. I think they are still three very easy games. And it's not to mean I don't think you guys are playing a lot better, because you definitely are. But I still don't see you finishing in the top four at all. Maybe I'll eat my words by the end of the season, but I think the new United needs a new manager.
I think next week we'll be having a massive in-depth discussion about United, either way, with the result against Tottenham. The big game, the top two played each other, Manchester City beating Liverpool 2-1. Liverpool are top of the table by 4 points. It's slight favourites to win the league with the bookies. Who would you guys bet on if you had to?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I think it depends how the next month goes, how much Liverpool bounce back from it. I know they've got a few injuries. They've got obviously a centre back worries now, with Van Dijk, the only fit recognised centre back. That's the deal breaker for me, which is why it's City, is because if Liverpool get a couple of injuries, that's they're out for me. Like, they lose, like Van Dijk is pretty much holding that defence together. Like, I like Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, but
well, I think Lovren get injured.
Injured.
You've got Moreno coming in, which I think's
disaster as far as I'm concerned.
That's you're not keeping a clean sheet with him in the defence, are you?
Exactly. So. And he's not even a better attacker than him as well. Like, Robertson's an amazing crosser and everything like that, and they don't have a load of great crosses in their team. But and not only that, but their forward line, like, Shaqiri's been really good this season. But if if Firmino gets an injury, then you've got Sturridge, and we were just talking about how he's fallen off a cliff since the start of the season. On the like, Shaqiri is a really good replacement, but only as a replacement. He's not anywhere near the caliber of Mane or Salah, even though he's been good this season. Like, whereas City, it's like, oh, Mahrez gets injured. Oh, they've just got Sané, Sterling as well. Like, or you know, it's insane their squad depth. Like, you've seen how easily they've competed without De Bruyne, and everyone's talking about De Bruyne being the best player in the world last season.
Mm.
You know, I think that's the thing that's going to set them apart, is when the Champions League really starts gearing up and they're playing loads of games and people start getting injured. I think that could cause trouble for Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. Manchester City have sold Brahim Diaz to Real Madrid. He was a highly rated youngster, but he barely got any game time. I think it's about 15, 16 million the Madrid have paid for him. But the interesting thing is there's a clause in the contract that that City get 15% of any signing or any sale that if Madrid sell him down the line, unless it's a club in Manchester in which it's a 40% resale fee. So
I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, if it's a club in Manchester, not sure who that is, but yeah, it's 40%.
In case he joins FC United.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know if it's Manchester or Greater Manchester, because if he joins someone like Bolton or Bury or someone.
That's amazing. That's such a good clause. That's almost just like, that's only there for the sake of a wind-up, surely, in a way. Like, that's amazing. Yeah, Guardiola said something really interesting about it, though. He said something along the lines of, he doesn't want players at the club who don't want to play for City or something like that.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Like so it's whether he's got a stinking attitude or something, it's weird for a manager to come out and say that about like a 19-year-old. And not say it like, oh, he just wants to go and play. But he said it in the way that's like, oh, he doesn't want to play for City. Really strange. But could be good for him. I don't get the point of moving to Real Madrid, to be perfectly honest. I think you'll get the same treatment there as you would at City. Mm. I think that's really strange to me. They're going to spy at least two or three world-class players in the summer, because of the state their squad's in now. He's probably not going to play. I don't get it from his point of view. I'd have rather gone off and joined, I don't know, Dortmund, like Sancho did, or something like that. I think it's a bit weird, but
didn't he like say though in an interview, my first choice was Real Madrid, my second choice was Real Madrid, my third choice was Real Madrid.
So, yeah, that sounds like a kid with like who thinks he's going to walk into the first team though.
That's interesting, because I've never really seen him play. So I think he came on a few times in the cups and had a few nice touches, but if he's got a poor attitude, then Pep's right to get rid of, because I think Pep's does his best part, but being a manager is to coach the kids over the summer. Mm. Foden seems like he's got a great attitude. And even tonight, using us as an example, tonight looking at their team news, they didn't even start any youngsters. So I think if you've got players who are moaning about not starting, Pep clearly doesn't like that. And obviously Guardiola is one of the best, he is the best manager in the game at this day and age. So you can't really go around and argue with him.
Yeah, it's interesting with Pep's sort of philosophy for youth development, because his philosophy is, like with Foden, it's really interesting because he came out in a couple of weeks ago and said he will not go out on loan. It's not going to happen. People need to stop asking about it. And what's interesting about that is he obviously feels that the best thing for the young players that he has is for them to stay with him and like learn under him, which is a bit of an ego trip, but also like he obviously thinks he can get the best out of these players that they wouldn't get somewhere else, and there's probably some truth with that. I personally would rather see Foden playing 30 games a season for anyone, but he obviously is a promising young player. But it is interesting that seems to be the idea with City, is that the youth, like there's been a couple that have come through like Sinchenko, but even he's playing as a left back and he's a CAM, so it's a bit weird. But I think it's interesting to, like, that will be something to have to see with City over the next few years, is because like they've been touting up their academy for a really long time, but Foden is pretty much the only graduate that looks like he's getting in the first team. So it'll be interesting to see how they do with their academy and whether they just fall into the same trap as Chelsea, where nobody gets in it in the first team in the end.
Liverpool have offloaded a couple of players, both to Bournemouth. Nathaniel Clyne joined them on loan, which pissed off Neil Warnock, I saw. And their young striker Solanke's joined them for $19 million. Bournemouth really needed a couple of reinforcements, didn't they? The squad looked very thin. I know when they played United a couple of weeks ago, They just didn't seem to have the players. It was a very makeshift side. But hopefully that'll help them out.
I think Solanke, it was a lot of money. Was it 18 million, 19 million?
19, yeah.
See, I'm happy we did a bid for that. As much as he's a great youngster, I think if... Yeah, Bloom, we're very sensible the way Brighton purchased, but that's not just going for Brighton. It's probably a lot of clubs. Bournemouth have obviously bid in 19 million. Fair enough. If it works out, it works out. But this is a lad who is obviously very young. So it depends what, obviously, the way. It depends also as well if they're going to get rid of Callum Wilson. Obviously, Chelsea and Tottenham interested. But no, I think it's a lot of money to spend. The client, on the other hand, is a great bit of business because I think they're a bit short in the full-back area, isn't it? They've got a couple of injuries, haven't they? Adam Smith, Simon Francis are both injured. So, I think that will help in their full-back area. I think it'll be a good signing for them. I know Mr. Warnock's not too impressed by it. But I think Blanky, whilst he is a great youngster, more high talent, I think he could potentially be a good player for England. 19 million is it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's insane considering that like the fee they paid for signing him as an agent from Chelsea was £3 million. And like Chelsea obviously, you know, Chelsea would have tried to make money out of him if they wanted to. They obviously thought they couldn't make that much in that situation because his contract was running out and whatever. But yeah, when I saw we were linked with him, I thought it would be in sort of 8, 9, 10 million bracket, like the worth a punt kind of money. But 18 million, it would have been our record signing. And it could have very easily ended up being a flop. Like the best example is what it could end up being is somebody like Jordan Ibe, where everyone rated him so highly, and then Bournemouth signed him for like 25 million. And he's done nothing at the moment. Like, sure, he could turn into a great player. Like, I do like him. He does seem like a very good player. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes on to be a good Premier League striker. But it is a risk. I'm surprised teams didn't opt for the loan just to see how he would do instead. But I guess Palace turned it down. So they must, you know, they're always wrong. So they, you know.
Few transfers out there for our Scottish listeners. Celtic have signed Timothy Weah from PSG, George's son, and Oliver Burke's both. They've both gone in on loan for the rest of the season. Oliver Burke from West Brom, and also Jermaine Defoe's joined Rangers. He said that was because of Steven Gerrard being there that he chose them. Any interest in the Scottish League transfers there, or can we just move on?
Defoe and I think you missed another one. Davis from Southampton's gone Rangers. I think that's two excellent signings.
Yeah.
Really great players. Definitely could do a job in the Premier League. So, no, I think of myself, I can't panic about Rangers' business there. Defoe, Morelis is getting $20.
He'll rip that league to shreds.
Yeah.
He'll score 30 before the end of the season.
He'll score a lot.
Yeah, and when you were saying he's joining Steven Gerrard, don't you mean he's joining Connor Goldson?
But I think to be fair, Davis, though, I think Davis in the midfield would be a great signing as well.
Absolutely. I always loved him. I always hated like playing against him because he used to always play well against us as well.
I think Ollie Burke at Celtic, I mean, this is actually could be a good sign. I hope it does work out because he's a really good player, Ollie Burke. He had a lot of potential at Nottingham Forest. Went abroad, and to be fair enough, he tried to do his luck abroad, didn't go to plan. He's come back to West Brom. I think he started off okay, but I think he just made a lot of wrong decisions. I think, to be fair, in all fairness to him, he wasn't really brought into a football club that was doing well. It was a club that was going down. The manager he had to work under weren't great, let's face it. He never really would play under Darren Moore, who's done a good job. He had to play under Pulis and Pardew. I think you can't really envy the bloke.
It's one of them. If he'd joined a Bournemouth or a Brighton, it might have worked out differently for him.
Potentially, if he got a bit of freedom. So I'm hoping that you've seen with Scott, like Celtic, they've revitalised like Scott Sinclair. He's now back to the Scott Sinclair that used to love taking on players and stuff and being a very nice winger. So hopefully they can get the same with Ollie Burke. It could be a really, really good signing.
I should be a bit more positive about the Scottish League. I was being a bit negative. I'm just used to Shane dissing me if I mention something like that. But yeah, it's quite exciting.
To be fair, I normally lay into people whenever they mention the Scottish League.
Well, this year, for once, it's exciting.
Yeah, that's true. This year, it might be worth watching.
You've got Gary Dicker playing centre mid for Kilmarnock.
Well, they're both level on points, Celtic and Rangers. Celtic have played one less game, but they're both on 42 points level. And then, you know, you've got teams like Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock are a point behind. Aberdeen are on 39, so they're three off. But it's like an actual league. It's an actual league this season. Yeah, Celtic have really, really struggled. They've not had it all their own way like they have in the past. And
didn't they have that league?
Didn't they have like a nightmare transfer window where they sold like all their good players, like Dembele and everyone like that, and Dembele, is he still there? I thought he went to the team in France.
No, sir.
No.
I thought he did. But they obviously they sold Armstrong to Southampton as well. Moussa Dembele plays for Lyon.
Oh really?
Yeah, he joined them in the last summer. This summer. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I remember I had a friend at uni.
Sami Nasri is expected to make his debut for West Ham this weekend. He had a ban, but he joined the day after his ban expired. He's likely to make his debut against Arsenal, so I'm sure he'll be a popular figure.
It's the stupidest signing I've ever heard.
It's just a typical West Ham signing.
Yeah, it's so gross.
It's not these players who like, well, shit, he's done nothing for them.
It's not like they even need a player in Nasri's position. Like, if they wanted to play 10, it's like, oh, they've got Lanzini and Anderson.
Yeah.
If they wanted to play a winger, they've got Antonio. Arnautovic can play as a winger. They've just got so much depth in that position and no central midfielders. Leon Malenko, exactly. Like, it's such a weird signing, man. I was really sick.
I guess he presumably knows the manager.
He's taking about 60 grand? I reckon he's earning about 60 grand a week as well.
Yeah. And he's like a known rotten egg. Like he's a proper bad lad, you know.
I assume he's the manager from City though.
I guess that's probably it.
Yeah.
But I would hate it if we signed him. There's some talk
on Arnautovic might be going to China, isn't there, for 30, 35 million, something like that. I think the club have received a bid.
I thought they stopped taking all the players to the Chinese league.
Unfortunately not, from the looks of things. I don't know, I hope he stays. I really like Arnautovic. He's such an arrogant player. He's really enjoyable to watch.
He is good for the Prem. Like the guy who's like amazing for 15 games a season and everyone loves then, and then is rubbish the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other transfers anyone's seen or rumours or anything you want to mention?
It's been quite quiet so far. There hasn't been many big rumours at the moment. There's murmurs about Hazard going to Real Madrid, but I think that's more likely to happen next summer.
Yeah.
If that does.
Tammy Abraham staying at Villa as well.
Yeah. It's one of those things where weirdly, very few teams are really desperate for signings. Like, I think there'll probably be signings for Cardiff, Huddersfield, Fulham, you know, the bottom teams, Southampton maybe. Like, a lot of the bottom teams I think will make signings. But any of the top teams, I don't really think United will make any big signings because they wouldn't do it without their new, without knowing who their new manager is and what kind of players he would want. Liverpool and City spent loads and pretty much have their squad set as they are. Tottenham spent nothing but are going to continue to spend nothing while the stadium is costing them their transfer budget every year. It doesn't make sense for there to be any big moves in England. It wouldn't surprise me if Real Madrid continued to buy a load of players and that kind of thing to prepare for next summer, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be a massive move at the moment.
I think Callum Wilson will go. I think with
maybe Chelsea signing a striker. That's the one I can see happening if they spent 60 million on a striker or something.
Oh, I just think with Solanke coming in, they've still got Josh King there. I think they'll get rid of Callum Wilson.
I've always really liked Callum Wilson, to be fair. I've always thought he was an amazing player. He just had horrible injuries.
All right, well, just to finish the show, we'll go on to the second round of the quiz. See if Harry can either get a draw out of this week or whether Nick makes it a whitewash with a 2-0 win.
Hello.
So, it's Nick to play first this time, as Harry went first in the previous round. We're sticking with finals, but it's not the FA Cup. I want you to name any city which has hosted a Champions League or European Cup final.
Jesus.
There's a lot of guessable cities out there, but yeah, we'll play five each. You get to go first, yeah, name five each, and then if it's a draw, we'll go to sudden death.
Okay, London.
Yeah.
London's a good start.
London. They are, yep. Yeah.
Rome.
Yep.
Is Rome them?
Yeah, they are.
Istanbul.
Yeah, that was last year. I know that was the Liverpool one where they made their comeback, wasn't it? Istanbul.
Yes. Yes.
Who did it?
They've got it in 2020 as well. Interesting.
Munich. They must have done one.
Yep. I think they've done more than one, but yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought they'd done a few.
Three.
Madrid.
Yeah. Getting all the easy ones in.
I'm just going for the big capitals, but I'm doubting myself as to whether they have. But I will go with Paris anyway. I'm doubting myself as to whether they have though, because they, yeah, I'll go with Paris, but they probably haven't.
No, they have indeed.
They have. Okay. I thought they had, because PSG have pretty much only been a club for 25
years. Just to clarify, there's Saint-Denis, which is just outside Paris. I'm counting that as Paris. The Stade de France is there. And Parc des Princes. I'm counting both of them as Paris.
Okay.
But yeah, it's quite good.
Milan?
Yep, of course.
Okay.
San Siro's hosted it four times.
Okay.
It's 3-3, sorry.
Barcelona?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Most recently, 1999 Barcelona. Can't remember.
We burnt our way through a lot of the major cities.
Yeah, you got. There's just. Well, I won't say anything.
Amsterdam.
That was my next guess.
Yeah, that's correct. That's 5. We're on sudden death now. So you need to get this right.
Oh no.
There's still plenty of guessable ones, aren't there?
Wait, was that the sudden death one?
Well, it's 5-4 to Nick, so.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. God, I'm running out of ideas. why have I gone so blank? trying to remember any of the last few ones. I've gone completely blank.
Yeah, I can't really give you any clues, I'm afraid.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
There's some you ought to get, to be honest. It's not they're not all obscure, absolutely. Like Timbuktu or anything.
No. Well, that's good, because Timbuktu. All right, I'll cross that one off. Timbuktu. wait, it was Champions League finals, you said? Or
Champions League, or not European Cup, which is the competition that predated the Champions League, not the European League.
Yeah, okay.
We're going as far back as 1950. Helps.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. I wasn't alive then.
I just meant if you knew anything which happened, any, you know, major.
No, I didn't. I'll go with Lisbon for like.
Lisbon have hosted it.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
okay.
It's correct, that's
literally my last one.
Cardiff.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a really good one.
Yeah.
Only because I was years ago there.
It was a Gareth Bale returning factor, wasn't there? And all that.
Which makes me think that Glasgow must have done it at some point with Celtic. So yeah, I'll go. Glasgow then.
Yeah, Glasgow's correct.
That was almost a hint remembering that there's other places in the UK.
Frank.
6-6 over to you. Glasgow have hosted it 3 times most recently.
I've got a rude guess. Old
Trafford's ever hosted it.
Sorry?
I wonder if Old Trafford's ever hosted it.
Is that a guess or is that a thinking?
I know what you're like.
without looking, to be honest.
Yeah, we'll go for Man.
Yeah, they hosted the most boring final in history. It was a 0-0 in the early 2000s, I think 2003 or something. 2002.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Ultra.
The only sort of place I've got left, for some reason, I feel like somewhere like Prague might have done it, something like that. So I'm going to go with Prague.
Congratulations, Nick, you've won 2-0.
No, okay. I don't know. It would seem really obvious with the rest of them now when you tell me them.
Do you want? I'll go through the list unless Nick, any others that came to your mind that you wanted to.
No.
Okay. It's Amsterdam, Athens, Brussels. I was trying to help you with Brussels with the Hazel in. Barry, with Barry, Cardiff, Glasgow, Gelsenkirchen, Istanbul, Kiev, Lisbon, London, Manchester, Madrid, Munich, Milan, Bern, Rotterdam, London, Paris, Rome, Stuttgart, and Vienna. I think I said London twice because I definitely should have got
Vienna because I've bloody been there.
Athens was probably
another easy one. Yeah,
Athens, Kiev, I think was recent. I think Kiev was last year.
Yeah, those are the three I probably could have got.
And Brussels, I would say would is an obvious one listeners got, I would guess.
Yeah.
Anyway. Fair enough. Congratulations, Nick. You've won. That brings us to the end of the show. So you can follow us on Twitter at V2 Sport Network. Check out our wrestling shows. Anything interesting been going on with that recently, Nick?
No. we've reviewed the 29. Obviously, we did a 29 things of it, a 2019 fiction show. What we think is going to happen this year. As usual, Chris has got a few fantastic interviews on there as well. We've got a show coming up next week where we'll be reviewing the NXT UK takeover in Blackpool. So lots coming up, lots currently on there. So yeah. Check it out.
Check that out. I'm interviewing Andy Cousins, former Leeds player, next week, talking about the championships. I'm looking forward to that. Plenty to check out on V2 Sport Network. Also, our website, v2football.com. It's goodbye from myself, Nick, and Harry. Good night.
See you guys.